This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Good morning, good morning. Wherever you may be, maybe even good afternoon, depending on if you're back east. So you're here live with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff, as well as Instagram Live. I was up early this morning for Sunday because I had to be KTLA 5, and we did a segment on, what do you think, Thanksgiving and safety for pets during Thanksgiving, all the do's and the don'ts, and it was great. So I love the Thanksgiving holiday. It satisfies all the F's. You know, you got friends and family, you got food, of course you got football, and that all leads up to a lot of fun. So it's a great holiday, but there are some concerns when it comes to our pets. We'll go through that in a minute. So I'm waving to everybody. And so anyway, if while you're thinking about at what level of alkaline phosphatase we do a liver biopsy, well, here's the thing about alkaline phosphatase. It is, if that's the only liver enzyme that's elevated, then I would think other, not primary liver, because if it was primary liver, I would expect ALT, probably GGT, AS to be elevated as well, and a very sick dog. Whereas where we have high alkaline phosphatase, depending on the dog's age. So for one thing, animals that are on certain medications, for example, steroids or phenobarbital, are going to have elevated alkaline phosphatase. That's a gimme. Therefore, because of the elevation can be elevated because of medication like steroid, what happens if the dog is secreting too much of its own steroid, aka Cushing's disease? So dogs with Cushing's disease also have high alkaline phosphatase, and also it can come from muscle. And there's another thing, depending on the age, a lot of older dogs will get something called a hepatopathy, vacuolar hepatopathy. And one of the things we see with vacuolar hepatopathy is elevated alkaline phosphatase. So if I have ALP high, nothing else, next thing I would recommend, if the dog is also PUPD, meaning urinating a lot and drinking a lot, that is a classic sign of Cushing's disease. So the next thing to do to rule out, or maybe rule in, is Cushing's, I would do a low-dose dexamethasone suppression test. That is very, very important. Nitsan, how are you? So I would do a low-dose dex suppression, and that will either rule in or out, hopefully, most of the time, Cushing's. If Cushing's is the answer, that's the reason why alkaphos is elevated. If that is totally normal, the dog is not PUPD, not drinking and peeing like crazy, and everything else is otherwise normal, the other liver enzymes are normal, and it's an older dog, I'd probably say, you know what, let's just watch it. Maybe put the dog on some Denimarin, and it's probably vacuolar hepatopathy, which is, as I said, not uncommon for older dogs. So I wouldn't panic. Now, if the other enzymes are elevated, then I would do an ultrasound. And if we thought about a liver cytology or a biopsy, you know, it's interesting. Back in the day where we didn't have all these fancy tests like laparoscopy, I would do a liver biopsy. I would first check the bleeding panel and look for clotting. We want to make sure that the dog clots. Then we would take the ultrasound probe, find an area of the liver that looks like it may have some pathology, and stick what's called a true cut needle into it, take a little skinny sample of the liver, send it off for biopsy. There's a danger there because you could hit something, it could be bleed, and you're out of luck because there's no way to get to it fast enough. So now what they're doing is, if you want a liver biopsy where you're taking actually a piece of liver, then you could do it under with a laparoscope where you can actually visualize the surface of the liver, any area that really looks like it has pathology. And if there's bleeding, you could actually do something about it. So that is the new basically baseline way to do it. But of course, with that comes a greater expense. Now, liver cytology is where you just take a skinny needle and put it in the liver. That we can do. And we might get an answer that way. So I would probably start there, see if we're lucky to get an answer. But other than that, you can do what's called an open biopsy, which is where you actually open the abdomen, almost like you're doing a spay surgery or some sort of surgery, and you'll visualize the liver, you see it, you take a little piece of it, send it off for biopsy there, you can control the bleeding if it bleeds. I mean, but then you're looking at a surgery. So that's what I would recommend. Now, but if everything is normal, then I would say, I would watch it, call it vacuolar hepatopathy, and possibly just maybe give some Denimarin or some sort of liver supplement. as long as the dog is otherwise acting totally fine. Okay. All right. So let's see. Debbie, how are you? Okay. So while we are waiting for some questions, let me just talk. Let's talk a little bit about Thanksgiving. So while you guys are getting the courage to reach out with some questions, we'll talk about this. So I started my day, as I said, at KTLA 5, and we were talking about just Thanksgiving safety. And of course, the first thing is the foods. We want to avoid certainly fatty foods. Now, turkey is a little fattier than chicken, especially dark meat. So I would avoid that as much as possible. And the skin, of course, is fatty. Now, the thing with bones, remember, poultry bones are actually pretty soft. So they can bake into a bone, break into shards, pieces. And that's what can cause some damage, usually on the way down or on the way back up, which is why if a bone already gets into the stomach, I do not recommend inducing vomiting, because the bone itself is not toxic. It's the sharp edges. So if you have a dog that crunched on it and created some sharp edges, made itself into the stomach, okay. Now you're going to make them vomit. It's going to go back up this from the stomach in the esophagus. You don't want to risk tearing the esophagus. It's just not worth it. Ultimately, it'll get covered with other ingesta, feed them a little bit, maybe some bread, something that'll, you know, soften or cover those sharp edges. And typically it will go through. So anyway, that's kind of, you know, my recommendation. Now, how about things like raw onion, raw garlic? Those can be toxic. Of course, anything with raisins or grapes, very toxic. And also think about the non-sweetened, like if you're going a dessert and you're using something like a sugar-free substitute like xylitol, that can be very dangerous. And one of the things we've talked about before, and I can't stress it enough, is that we, there another name, came, it's like a new name for the xylitol, is birch sugar. Now, if you saw birch sugar, wouldn't you think of, come on, sugar coming from a tree? How much more natural could you get? Well, guess what? Deadly natural. So you want to be really, really careful. It's not worth, you don't want to take a chance. Okay, I got a couple of questions coming in. Can you talk about luxating patella surgery? So first of all, great question, by the way. This is from Shannon Corsi. So a lot of smaller breeds, especially, have luxating patella. And I don't recommend surgery if it's a grade one or a grade two, and the dog is not really showing any clinical signs, pain, no arthritis, leave it alone. They usually do fine. Now, let's say it's happening a lot when they're always lifting up a leg, or you take x-rays, there's associated secondary joint changes, then you might want to consider surgery. So the surgery is, what is done is you open up the knee, luxella is often luxated anyway, you then remove that cartilage, right, without maintaining the normal cartilaginous surface. You then take a bone rasp, and make the bone hole, part of the bone, deeper. And then you put that piece that you saved, that just the cartilage, back in that deeper crevice, and it'll heal. The other thing we do is these dogs often have when you think about it, the patellar ligament, all right, goes from muscle to bone, and that is going to muscle to bone. So, we have a call coming. Hang on. Yes. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Joe.
Hi there.
Yeah, I don't know if I could an email there a minute ago, and then I lost my Zoom because I might have started missing half your answer, but I had a question about the CCL injury for my dog, Cookie.
Okay. So, I'll tell you what. Since, hang in there, we're talking about media patella, and then we'll talk about CCL next. And that's cranial cruciate ligament rupture. Okay. And then we can talk about that. And then I'm going to have some questions for you in order to answer. And that'll help me also explain to our viewers what's going on. So to finish up, so the patellar tendon, ligament starts at the quadricep muscle group, goes over the tendon and then over over the kneecap. Then from the kneecap down to insertion, which is now bone and bone, that's called the patellar tendon. That insertion, okay, on the tibial crest is usually basically rotated medially in these small breeds. So in order to make a perfect alignment from quadriceps group to the tendon, to the kneecap to the tendon insertion at the tibial crest, we have to move the tibial crest laterally. So, or else there's always a pull, trying to pull the patella medially. So that's the third part of the surgery. So it's opening the knee, deepening the groove, now moving the tibial crest over laterally and reinserting it there. So the tendon has a new insertion. It's usually anchored with a strong suture, or a lot of times just a pin. And now we have realigned the patellar ligament to the patella itself, to the patella tendon. And now we have a straight line and it stays within that groove. Usually done by a boarded surgeon or someone who has done a lot of these. And it is very, very successful. Now we have a caller on Pet Life Radio. Let's talk about the other common knee problem called the cranial cruciate ligament rupture. Think of ACL. ACL in a person is a CCL in a dog. For some reason, anterior is the same as cranial. I don't know why the nomenclature is different, but it is. Just probably to confuse you. So anyway, now that you're confused, let's talk about that. So my question to you, Tommy's on the phone here at Pet Life Radio and is asking about CCL or the equivalent of ACL. So my question to you, Tommy, is how old is the dog and what breed?
She's an 11-year-old golden doodle, mini.
Okay, 11-year-old golden doodle. So here's the thing. There are, first of all, it's a common injury. Unfortunately, I'll give you the bad news first. 75% of dogs who blow a cruciate will blow the other one. Just keep that in mind, is that your 11-year-old doodle runs around and plays and I'm sure is very active. So anyway, what needs to be done is most likely there are two, well, there were many procedures over the years. The two most common ones now, which I recommend, the first one for large breeds, I would for your dog, all right? And that's called the TPLO, tibial plateau leveling osteotomy. And the second procedure, which I recommend for older, small breeds that aren't that active, it was kind of a fluke injury, that is called a lateral suture. The lateral suture is much less invasive, it's less expensive, and it'll do just fine. Now, but if you have an active dog or a dog who's a big, heavy dog, who's they say anything over 30 pounds, but sometimes I'll make it even over 40, then you want to do the TPLO. It was a procedure that was adopted many, many years ago. And what it does, what makes it so successful, is that it eliminates the need for the ligament in the first place. So you're not trying to recreate the ligament or do what the ligament normally did, like the lateral suture does. You are eliminating the need. It makes the cruciate ligament obsolete. So now the dog does, it's a very complicated procedure. It changes the angle. It moves the tibia forward while the tibial plateau stays backward. So there's always contact with the femur and the tibial plateau, despite the fact that the tibia itself is jutting forward. So therefore, you will still have the laxity, but there is complete continued contact between the distal femur and the tibial plateau, which is what you want to achieve after the surgery. So it was a masterful surgery, and it's been in use for so long. And it was dealt out by a surgeon who was also, I think, a physicist or something. So it was, his name is Barclay Slocum, Dr. Slocum. And it is now the industry standard for especially bigger dogs. So talk to your veterinarian. It is called the TPLO, tibial plateau leveling osteotomy, typically done by a surgeon. However, I know some ZPs that do a lot of surgery that have taken the course and do it. I don't. I have a traveling surgeon that comes in and does it for me. He's done, oh God, hundreds for me. And it really is it is the procedure of choice. And rehab, it's expensive. It means cutting bone. That means the bone has to heal. But these dogs do really, really well. So keep that in mind. All right. If you have any other questions, please reach out to me. So waving. All right. Any other questions? All right. Good. I think we're good. I didn't want to miss anybody. Liz Joy, thank you. I'm not too sure, but I'll take it. Jackie, hi. All right. FaceTime with my 3-year-old dog, Lou, and renal dysplasia. Turns out he has plenty bad UTI. He's now, oh, good. See, that's the difference. You want to rule these things out. This is why sometimes getting a second opinion is very, very important, because a lot of diseases can mimic each other And you can have some enzyme elevations because of different problems. And this dog is a three-year-old dog with supposed renal dysplasia, which is very serious and really not that common in a three-year-old dog. It could be a congenital problem, but it turns out a very severe UTI, urinary tract infection. And now he's on a good antibiotic and he can do fine. So when you're given really, really bad news, it's always wise to get a second opinion. Just talk, go online, do some homework, see what else it might be. What other diseases can cause those same symptoms, like what here, the same elevations in kidney enzymes, and you can save yourself a lot of heartache. So I appreciate getting you sharing that with us, and please keep me posted, because I'd like to know how Lou does after his course of antibiotics. One thing, if the infection was that bad to cause those serious a problem, then I would do minimum 3 weeks. Usually we do 10 days, 14 days. I would do 3 weeks and then reevaluate, and don't stop before the 3 weeks is up. Have the urinalysis redone, rechecked, and make sure it is no bacteria. If there's still bacteria, then I would recommend doing a culture, okay? And that way there may be more than one bug involved, and you may need a second antibiotic to beat this infection completely. But I would not stop the antibiotics until we have proof that the urine is bacteria free. So just keep that in mind. All right, so we are over time, of course, for our commercial breaks here at Pet Life Radio. So stay tuned, don't go away. Those of you who have questions, and we'll finish some do's and don'ts about Thanksgiving right after these short messages. Mark, take it away.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
So we're back here live on Pet Life Radio as well. Okay, I have not heard that cooling foods help with the allergies, but I will tell you, if it's the animal as having issues with venison, then yes, duck is a good alternative. Salmon, tilapia, cod, rabbit. I'm just trying to think of other strange animals that are no way related to any kind of meat, like the beef, the bison, the lamb. Those are all kind of, I'm sure, have some relationship to the beef. So maybe venison wasn't working well, but the duck should be a good thing to try. All right, amikacin. How would I send the results to me? You can just send them to drjeff@drjeff.com, drjeff@drjeff.com, or drjeff@petliferadio.com. And I'll be happy to take a look. Just leave me your phone number as well, so after I take a look at them, I can reach out to you and we can discuss. Watching my playback. That's cute. Why would a four-month-old puppy's leg shiver after lots of running and playing? That's exactly what happens. There's something called muscle fatigue. And so when these dogs overdo it, and puppies are going to overdo it, they don't have the common sense to say, oops, I've been doing this for a half hour. It's time to take a rest. They want to keep up. They want to do with you. They're having so much fun at the time. So they're going to just keep it going. So for sure, you're going to see muscle fatigue. I'm not that worried about it. Make sure the dog is eating well. As long as it's eating well and everything else is normal, I would just kind of maybe limit the exercise to like maybe 15 minutes after that stop, then and do it more like multiple times a day instead of one long, crazy morning out running around. So that should help. But again, nothing to be too concerned about. Okay, so we talked about the foods. Now, we talk about how it's festive and it is fun. I said all the Fs, football, fun, festive, family, friends, you name it. It's all part of Thanksgiving. But if you need to know your dogs. And if you're going to have a lot of company over, a couple of things you need to watch. First of all, do the dogs get super anxious? If they get anxious and they mate, that sweet dog of yours, especially with a lot of little kids, might become not so friendly, then you want to put them in a safe room, a room with their leave them alone, quiet, put the TV on, play some classical music, you know, give them their bed, their toys, a couple of treats, let them do their own thing. If you have a dog, it usually is pretty good with company. Just still make sure on the guests coming in and coming out, I always concerned about front doors because they may make a beeline for that door. So make sure again that you warn your guests, please don't feed the dog from the table, and be cautious coming in and out. Make sure your dogs are wearing the ID tags. Make sure your dogs are microchipped. Make sure the microchips are registered. Can't tell how many times I find I'm scanning a dog with the client. They want to know, they wanted the microchip number. I want to add it to the computer. And I said, so have you registered in your name? No, we got it from the breeder. They said it was microchipped. Oh, you got to register the dogs with your information, not the breeder, not the rescue, not the shelter. It's got to be your info. So find out. You can talk to your veterinarian. Reach out to me. I can give you a registry that registers everybody's chip, not just their own. And it's so inexpensive. I think it's $25-$30. And it's a lifetime registration. So you want to do that. You want to make sure your pets are registered. And then other thing to think about would be like decorations. Remember, lit candles could be dangerous, especially for cats that are just enthralled by the flickers of a flame. Anything that's wrapped, anything that's hanging, the dogs might get into. So, you know, it's just common sense things. Desserts. Oh my God. They love the desserts that you love. They love too. So watch them out the fatty foods. But again, chocolate is a potential problem. Onions, raisins, alcohol. You think, oh my God, who's going to give alcohol to a dog? Well, I did. When I was in college, we noted just sort of accidentally that my Labrador, who Kent, went to Berkeley with me. And this is back in the early 70s where I often joked that the professors were as high as the students. So they didn't care that he was in class with me in the big lecture hall. They couldn't tell anyway because I would always sit in the back, thus my terrible grades. But anyway, he was at a party with me, a frat party. And someone was holding their beer like they're kind of just holding in their hand and felt like a lot of slobber on their hands. And they looked down and there's Thor, my dog, lapping up the beer from this guy's cup. And he thought it was so funny. He's like, ah, this dog likes beer. Before you know it, he was getting drunk. And so, yes, dogs will drink alcohol. Fortunately, beer is not hard liquor. So he didn't get sick from it, but they can. And they can get ataxia, they can get respiratory problems, a rapid heart rate. They can actually get symptoms of alcohol toxicity. So you want to be really, really careful with alcohol as well. Eggnog, again, it's raw eggs. It's often alcohol. Again, these things are not good for dogs. And yet, they're going to like the taste. So it's a matter of being really careful. Flowers, decorations, you know, lilies are dangerous. Holly is potentially dangerous. English mistletoe. American mistletoe is not so bad, but apparently English mistletoe is. Then you have Sweet William. You have certain ferns, amaryllis. Oh God, hydrangeas. There are a lot of flowers out there and plants that are potentially toxic. So you want to go online, check it out. If you have these in your house, I would not get rid of them. There are enough pretty stuff that are safe for your pets that you can put out in a vase and enjoy what they look like or what they smell like. And you don't have to put your pets in danger. Lilies will kill a cat. Just so you know, not only lily flower, but even the water. When you put it in a vase, you got that little container at the bottom that picks up the water. If their cats drink from that water, it could kill them. So you got to be really, really, really careful. Raisins and grapes, we talked about a million times. So these are all the things you got to be careful. All right. So I believe we got a hold of everybody. And if I missed you, or if you have something that you want to talk about and were unable to get me here, or maybe I missed you, then reach me out at Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com. You can join on Instagram anytime. Send me a message. Make sure you include, if you don't mind, include your phone number, because a lot of these, when you have something that's a problem and there's really a discussion, I hate texting. So it takes too long. I could talk, as you can tell, I could talk way faster than I can text. So I can cover a lot more ground in a lot less time. So I would recommend, if you don't mind, I will be happy to call you back and we can talk about your problem, what the issue is, and what we can do about it. I think that is it. I don't think I missed anybody. And I appreciate you all joining me today. And have a really, really safe, happy Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much. Make sure your pets don't eat too much either. and what they do eat, make sure it's healthy for them. And if you have any other questions, as I said, just reach out to me anytime. Otherwise, we will be here next week, same bad time, same bad channel. It'll be a holiday weekend for many. Hopefully, you'll be around to tune in on Pet Life Radio at 9 a.m. Western time, that's Pacific time, and noon back east, and anything in between. Save your questions up if they're not like urgent, that way we can share the information with everybody, and I think it'll be a lot more beneficial. All right, so have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.